It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, online at harvellandcollins.com. And Cecil Harvell is with us, and along with Andrew Foster, in for Wes this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning,
Ben.
So what are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, Ben, Wes is in a Superior Court jury trial this morning and this week. So I woke Andrew Foster up, awakened him this morning, and here he is with us.
I thought he might have interrupted your tea time or something.
Which is always a pleasure. Andrew, of course, helps every day with our administration of estates, which is a big way of saying settlement of the estate, Ben, in our office. And we want to kind of, if you will, as we talk about, demystify some of the filings that we handle in the course of the administration or the settlement of an estate. These are the classic kinds of filings, and we get lots of questions. You know, the file begins, Ben, with the client coming in, opening up the estate by qualifying as the executor, reading the will, seeing the terminology that's in the will, the provisions that are in the will.
Right.
And having the executor, the duly appointed person in that will, sign an oath saying that they take responsibility for serving as the executor. And part of this responsibility is that they will account to the clerk and that they will account to the court, if you will, on time. This is the quid pro quo. This is where the accountability is established. And if for some reason then this executor does not account on time with the appropriate kind of documentation and supporting documentation, then the clerk of court, the court, is able to have that executor subpoenaed, if you will, by the sheriff, summoned into the clerk's office or into the court by the sheriff for hearing as to why they are not accounting.
Okay.
So there is accountability that is established by the oath taken by the executor. Now, the very first question that then the executor asks of Andrew and myself is, well, you know, guys, I'm now the executor. Here I go. When do I first need to do one of these accountings?
Right.
And tell me what that accounting is and what is on that accounting and talk to me about when I next now need to meet with you. And I'll let Andrew tell us about that very first accounting that we do.
Well, Ben, initially, at that initial appointment, on the application for letters, there's actually a preliminary inventory section on the application. And so this would be if you knew that the decedent had, you know, certain bank accounts, certain automobiles, you know, other assets, stocks, bonds, life insurance.
It's just preliminary.
It's just preliminary. And so a lot of times what happens is, you know, we could have an executor who is very familiar with the decedent's assets. And so you can fill out a pretty detailed preliminary inventory because they know they may have been the power of attorney during the person's life and maybe have, you know, intimate knowledge as to where all the money is, you know, where the stocks are, where the IRAs are. And so they're able to fill out a pretty detailed preliminary inventory. On the flip side, we run into a lot of times, Ben, where the executor may not have that information. There's a lot of individuals who are very private with their affairs. And so, you know, we have times in our office where the executor comes to us and says, well, I don't really know. I'm not real sure where I'm going to start getting this information from. And, you know, and the best thing to do at that point in time is say, well, go through, you know, your parents or your friend or whoever it may be, important papers, and see what you can glean from them. And then just start checking the mailbox and see what comes in as far as statements go.
Yeah.
So it's very important, you know, to try to get a handle on these assets as quickly as possible.
Especially, and nowadays, you have to check the email.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you and get passwords, because a lot of statements don't even come in the mail any longer.
You're exactly right, Ben. It's important, so you can start putting the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
And so this preliminary inventory is just more or less your best guess at that point in time. You don't have to be down to the penny. You know, you can put, I think they got $10,000 in the bank, and you can put that in there, and that's not, you're not going to be held to that number.
Mm-hmm.
Then they give you, the clerk of court and the statutes here in North Carolina give you 90 days, or roughly 3 months, from this initial filing to put together what's called the inventory for decedent's estate. And this is a two-page form, Ben, that the AOC has put together. And on the front side are what we call the probate assets of the estate.
Right.
And that means the accounts that were held solely in the decedent's name or that the decedent had control over. And then on the flip side of the form, we have non-probate assets, which include accounts that were held jointly with right of survivorship or other property which pass outside of the estate with possibly a transfer on death or a payable on death designation that would go on the non-probate side. And the only time that these assets really come into play is if we have debts of the estate that exceed the probate assets. And these accounts that pass TOD, POD, that are joint with right of survivorship, or even real property, are there to potentially come back into the estate for the executor to have to make a decision to say, well, we don't have enough funds in the estate to pay this, this, and this, so therefore we're going to have to claw back those items in order to pay debts of the decedent. And our obligation as far as reporting those, as long as there aren't these debts that I was speaking of, is to get the date of death value for these accounts and put them on this inventory on this second side of the page.
You need a snapshot of what of that day.
You're exactly right. A snapshot of what they had that day. And as long as there are no creditor issues, that's all we really need from those accounts. It's just the snapshot as of the date of death of the decedent. Put those on the form, and that meets our accounting burden to the clerk of court.
Now, what happens is those accounts may grow, right, or decline.
Exactly. Well, the thing about those accounts, Ben, since they are either payable on death or joint with right of survivorship, the way that works is that the statutes view that as of the date of death, those accounts became the other person's account. And the only way that those accounts come back into the estate is if they're needed to pay claims from creditors. And then the executor has to take some type of action to get those accounts back in or get that real property back in to sell in order to pay debts of the decedent. So that's the way that those assets in particular work.
Mm-hmm.
On the front side of the page, the probate assets, again, these would be accounts that were held solely in the decedent's name, stocks, bonds, investment accounts held solely in the decedent's name. Even one that's in particular that kind of catches people sometimes is automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get a lot of times where an individual says, well, I've got my automobile held with my husband or wife, my spouse, so that's not going to be a probate asset. And the rule in North Carolina, Ben, is that even if you have your husband and your wife's name on the car title, we view that as owning half the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you have joint with right of survivorship, JTWROS, on that title, half of that car is going to be a probate asset that you need letters testamentary or letters of administration to pass that other half of the car out to the surviving spouse. So it's very important, you know, that's kind of one of those things that people get confused about a lot of times, but that is the way that the law works in North Carolina. And our obligation on those probate assets is to track, if it's a bank account, we need to start getting the date of death value, not only, same thing as the non-probate assets, but we need to get the date of death value, and then we need to track those accounts until they are either liquidated and put into an estate account, or if they're transferred in kind or transferred directly to the beneficiaries of the estate, when that occurs and what that amount is. And same thing with vehicles, when they get transferred over to, when you actually go to the DMV and sign over title to the beneficiary, that needs to be shown on the next accounting that we'll get to.
All right. So, again, this is a rolling figure then, right? I mean, you have a snapshot, but then you have some others that are going to be coming along
this
the way.
This is known as the 90-day inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, Ben, we've talked about on the program before that during this 90-day period, the executor is under the duty of marshaling together the assets.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of it's the time to investigate, marshal together these accounts, as mm-hmm. Andrew discussed.
Right.
It is not the time to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the time to become organized.
Right. Right.
Because you can't start paying bills until you have all your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, suppose you don't have enough money to pay all of the bills in their entirety.
Mm-hmm.
The bills might have to be prorated. The bills might have to be paid according to the guidelines in the statute. Certain bills have a priority.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what one of those might be,
That's
don't
right.
we?
Yeah,
Internal
bet.
Revenue Service.
Yeah. Right. All right. Now we'll take a break. We'll come back with more. If you have questions, you are welcome to call in and ask them.
Call me at 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell, Andrew Foster in this morning, and we were talking about the accounting periods and that you have to do after an estate. But we were talking during the break also about what does not go into that.
Well, keep in mind that during this same time now, during this three-month period, the notice to creditors is running, the time period in which corporations can make their claim against the estate. So that again, the executor is receiving information to know exactly what the assets are, and then of course what the bills are, or what the claims might be against the estate. Any mortgages that might be owed against any properties, any lines of credit that are outstanding against any properties, any margins that are due on any particular investment account.
Mm-hmm.
All of this information during this three-month period is being accumulated so that we then are able to make this accounting and become organized for what one might call months 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And again, the accounting period, we talked about the snapshot, the 90-day, but there's some accounts that don't show up that, you know, may not get an accounting for. The executor may not even know exists for another 6 months.
That's true, Ben. I mean, you mentioned one in particular where if you don't have the email password and they're getting e-statements, that you may not get those statements. And so you may find out at a later date that, oh, wow, there is this account hanging out there. Or, you know, there may be an account that we think might be necessary to be put on the probate side. For example, you know, individual retirement account, an IRA, is typically, as long as there's a designated beneficiary, it doesn't show up on the 90-day inventory at all, according to the guidelines. But if its beneficiary is the estate, or if there's no beneficiary name and the default beneficiary is the estate, then it's a probate asset.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's interesting to have meetings sometimes with clients, and they come in and they say, well, I've got this, this, and this. And you've got to probe questions because really the answer to who the beneficiary is could depend on where we put that on the form.
Yeah.
So it's not just every time an IRA is a non-probate asset or every time life insurance is a non-probate asset or even not even on the form in at all. But because there could be a designation or I mean, that could change where it goes on the form itself. And then again, we mentioned the form and the two sides. And the big thing about the two sides is that the ones that go on the front page, we have to track to the very end. And so, you know, I'm talking to executors on a daily basis and saying, yeah, I'm going to need statements, you know, going back to the date of death going forward until we close that account out and put it in the estate account. They look at me like I'm crazy sometimes and they go, why do you care? I gave you the check. And I said, no, your obligation as an executor is to show every single transaction that occurred in that person's bank account from the date of death until we, you know, liquidate that account.
Right.
And so you know, it's a lot of information gathering. It's a lot of going back and maybe getting information that you thought was irrelevant when you, you know, when you initially started your job as the executor of the estate. But that's the duty that must be upheld is that if it's a probate asset, when we go to report that either on an annual account or a final account, which occurs 1 year from the date we filed the paperwork with the clerk of court's office, we have to track those assets. And it's down to the penny. I mean, that's just the way it works here in North Carolina is that you have to make sure that every single cent is accounted for, because there could be a beneficiary out there who's going to make a big deal about how those assets came into the estate.
Right.
And if there was any issues with getting the assets into the estate and then paying the proper claims and then getting the money out to them. So it's very important that, you know, you stay organized, you keep any and all statements associated with the accounts, and that we make these accountings correct and timely filed.
Assets that are non-liquid, do you have to get an estimate of what they're worth? Do you have to have that?
It depends.
I mean, a gun collection.
Yeah, gun collection would be a prime example of where we would want to get an appraiser to come in. Mm-hmm. Some people ask us, you know, if they need to come in and get an appraisal of every spoon, knife, and fork in the property. And most of the time, Ben, if we can work out an arrangement amongst the beneficiaries to divide the tangible personal property, mm-hmm. which is easier said than done, by the way.
Right.
A lot of times this does cause issues. As long as we can get a kind of an agreement in hand, then unless there's something in particular like an antique collection or a gun collection or paintings or
around
anything
here
like
is duck
that.
Decoys.
Duck decoys. You know, then we can agree that we'll put a number on the tangible personal property and that we'll split it evenly. But if there's any problems, if there's any types of issues or beneficiaries can't agree, then at that point in time, the best case scenario for an executor is to get everything inventoried and then set up some system in place such as a pick'em or other means of dispersing the assets in order to fully protect the executor.
Yeah, like a draft party. Who gets to go first there? Huh? Sometimes.
Ben, next, of course, it would be satisfying the creditors, okay? And in many, many files, this is just not a problem at all. The debts have been kept up with through the life of the decedent. There are no mortgages on the property. You know, mom and pop kind of files. There's no mortgage. The mortgage has been paid off. There might be some small equity line on their house, but the monies are there in the money market account or wherever to pay that off.
Right.
And so there are no loans on the cars. Okay. And so those files are awfully nice, okay?
Yeah.
No real outstanding issue in terms of creditors. There are other files, of course. I was talking with a lawyer yesterday that said, you know, some of the most complicated estates can be estates where there are lots of creditors and very few assets. Or not enough assets to satisfy all the creditors, because we then do get into the priorities that are set forth in the statutes, and even then proration. And that is a real bugaboo, if you will. It's doable. We do it a lot. We do it. But it's in time intensive and cumbersome when that happens.
More to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Cecil Harvell and Andrew Foster with us this morning, and you can call in with your question.
Call 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674.
We're talking about a state administration, and Andrew Foster, along with Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins, with us. And, you know, one thing that estates are their own entity. I mean, they have their own tax ID number, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So not only is this, quote, down to the penny, imperative relative to protecting the beneficiary, but also the obligation to the taxing authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, many of the estates have fiduciary returns, obligations to file, potentially, or in some estates, estate tax returns to file. And so as a result of this, of course, absolutely, the record keeping is imperative.
And beyond the record keeping too, I mean, the executor is charged with taking care. I mean, they have to make sure the assets remain in good shape, right?
They do.
Like you don't have a car, you don't send the car off for a kid to go ahead and drive it, even though he may end up with it.
Well, that's one of the first, to mention the car, that's one of the first things we do is instruct the clients to pretty much a car that's titled in the name of the decedent needs to stay parked and just secured and the mm-hmm. keys put away until such time as we can get the title transferred.
Right.
Because, of course, if the car is, you know, circulating all across the country and there's an accident and it's titled in the name of the decedent, then, of course, who knows, but there could be a liability or an issue that will then tie up the estate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a real prudent thing to do to drive a vehicle or boat,
mm-hmm.
I might add,
right.
that is in the decedent's name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, after this 90-day inventory here in the last 3 minutes of the program, wow, Andrew,
mm-hmm.
we gear up for, of course, what would be known as the final accounting if we're ready to close, or if we cannot close within 1 year, then we have to just do an annual accounting.
Mm-hmm.
We'll kind of skip over the annual accounting. That kind of speaks for itself. It just, in one sentence, it shows where the estate is at that point at the annual
mm-hmm.
Anniversary, if you will, of the filings, okay? The monies that have come into the estate, the monies that have gone out of the estate. And it just shows, it's a snapshot again of where we are at the annual. It's not, you know, we have a lot of annuals, Ben,
mm-hmm.
but of
yeah.
course most estates we try to go ahead and close.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't go beyond the 1 year. And they don't even take up to the 1 year.
Right.
They're closed at the 6th month or the 7th month or the 8th month. Okay.
Right.
So let's take a minute and talk about now what's on the final accounting.
Okay. Well, that's we're out of time for
are
today.
We are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That clock, the battery, I think, is dying in that one. So, that's, if you want to find out more, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. You can reach them at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.